Yeah, don't get us wrong. There's still going to be plenty of randomness to the show.
Of course, that's the name football, of the show. The other name is off topic.
But this is football.
What you want, we've got and it might be hard to listen, but it makes your rage glisten. Our voice is about the games. And you know, we talk about the latest goings, more so than any other, and our Mountain West matters. Well, will you listen to this podcast too? And you rant about this podcast too. Just a side where Jeremy analyzes some matches and kiss with Grin the Bridges. We do some good interviews. And you know, from Fresno all the way to Boise, from Logan down to Esty, they're calling out our name. Where will you listen to this podcast too?
All right, welcome back to the latest Mountain West Connection podcast. We are going to recap week 7 of the Mountain West season, which, sure, it was okay, right, Matt?
I think it made the conference a little more interesting all in all, yeah.
It definitely did. Our website's mwcconnection.com. You know where to find us, Blog Talk Radio, SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, all those fun places. Twitter, mwcconnection. I did a little video over the weekend about the literally dozens of people that showed up to the Cotton Bowl.
I saw that picture. It is alternately brilliant and sad.
We'll get to that going later, because we do go chronological order, so we'll make sure to hit that game later. But if you do look closely enough below where the press box photo was taken, there was more people there, but still. There's a reason they're showing only the cadets in the crowd when they had the camera shots.
That's true.
But and they were extreme close up, because there are guys walking up and down the stairs because how close they're getting. So let's get to Friday night game. You were at this game, San Diego State at Fresno State. People didn't appreciate the title I came up with, that Aztecs win for the first time at Fresno since 97. People thought that was a bit. It's true, but they thought it was a bit much, because it's only been, what, the fourth time since then they've played overall at Fresno since 97.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, maybe it is a little bit misleading, because they've really only played a handful of times because they weren't conference mates for most of that time. But, yeah. I mean, they came in here and basically played like they owned the place. It was a 17-3 final, and honestly, it wasn't even that close. I mean, where do I begin? It was just like, it felt like a funeral walking in there, like... There was no passion at all from the stands, really, or from the players themselves for the most part. They let themselves get pushed around on defense. You know, the Aztecs went in there, you know exactly what they're going to do. They're going to run the ball and they're going to play defense. And they let Donnell Pumphrey run the ball 38 times for 220 yards and 2 touchdowns. All right, the only 2 touchdowns the Aztecs scored all game. They didn't really pressure Chapman all that much. You know, the box score isn't going to tell the whole story, I don't think. You know, he didn't do much because he didn't really have to. And on the opposite end, you know, they still couldn't find very many running lanes. You know, Dontell James averaged just over 2 yards a carry. Chase and Virgil had another... honestly, he might have had his worst game of the season. Yeah, just because of the 2 interceptions that he threw. And if you didn't watch the game, I mean, you can see, like... You could probably make the argument he might have regressed a little bit or something like that. Because the first one that he threw, it was into double coverage. And if he had put a little more air under it, I think that Jameer Jordan probably could have, you know, turned on the afterburners and beaten the defender that he was on him. But it turned out that he was double covered and he threw it right to Devontae Casey, more or less. And the second one was even more of an airmailed throw to kind of wrap up the game. And I feel like I'm rambling a little bit. I'm not saying
anything. It's okay.
I mean, I'm not really saying anything new. either, which is the really frustrating part. Like, San Diego State, everybody knows what their game plan is, and they still weren't able to stop it.
This was the most dominant 17-3 win I've seen in a long time, because...
Yes.
Yeah, Aztecs, like, Pumphrey, like, he had, what, 100, I think he had over 100, 125 yards in the first half itself, yeah. And I'm watching this game, I started watching, like, midway second quarter, and I started watching second half, I'm like, once they score that second touchdown, I'm like, I'm out of here, it's 17-3, Fresno has not been able to move the ball at all. And you got to give a little credit, I guess, to Fresno's defense, because with Pumphrey getting the amount of yards he did, they were technically in this game. Like, a two-touchdown loss to San Diego State is not that big a deal. It's just that Fresno ended up with 3 points.
Yes and no.
Because this could have been a lot worse. With 220 yards, you figured they could have had, like, 28 points or something with him running the ball and nearly 300 overall.
Yeah, I mean... I'll say this, you know, the very first drive of the game, they were able to stop Pumphrey on 4th and goal, basically at the 1-yard line. The problem, again, is that the offense really wasn't able to do anything all game long. And, you know, aside from the 1 field goal drive that they had early in the third quarter, you know, they didn't really go anywhere on offense. You know, they their average field position was their own 17-yard line.
Oh.
And, you know, they were continually just backed up and weren't able to do anything with it. Like, the one drive before the field goal was when they got to the San Diego State 36, and they brought out the punt team, which elicited a lot of loud boos. And then, of course, it ends up being a fake, and Cusick throws an interception anyway.
So, yeah, it's like,
why are you bothering then?
I know. It's like the announcers are like, Technically, it's okay, because it's like a punt that got it, like, at the 8-yard line, end of the half. But if you're going to do that, have your quarterback make the play. If you throw an interception, it's not throwing the interception that deep, probably better than trying to go for it and just running for, like, 5 yards or an incomplete pass. But if you want to go for it, bring your QB out to let him throw it down the field, because you and me kind of had a little back and forth with Aaron Taylor, the broadcast, saying they have three of the most talented wideouts in the conference. And I'm like, maybe I like Aaron Peck. You're more high on them than I am. Probably you see him a bit more than me. But on this position, if they say you have that talent out on the wideouts, you have a decent quarterback, you think Chase and Virgil's your guy, being at the 36-yard line, it's like, it's duh. They're going to be ready for the fake punt. And say, like they said, Aztecs, rarely, when they're in this position, they rarely stick a guy back there. They'll go safe punt return every time. So it's not like, I don't know what Tim Drueter or whoever made the call to make the fake punt was, hadn't studied the Aztecs film, who a lot of the times when they're at this part of the field, they'll just let the ball go over the head and bring up whoever's the return guy, basically be like a safety back there just in case something like this happens.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't necessarily want to turn this into the complaints about Fresno State segment again. I do want to give credit to the Aztecs too, because they did what good teams do, and that is beat bad teams soundly. And, you know, it wasn't just KZ who had the interception. Cameron Kelly had another one. And I believe it was it Derek Babiesh who had that fake punt interception?
I believe so. He made a pretty nice play to get to. He probably just knocked it down, but yeah, made a good play to snag it.
So, yeah, I mean, it wasn't glamorous by any stretch, but, you know, give credit to them for having a game plan, sticking with it, and being able to execute it soundly. Like, they beat up on those front seven more often than not. And while, you know, Fresno was able to, I think they had like 6 tackles for loss. So they were able to stop them in kind of fits and starts. But I mean, on the whole, Pumphrey had an above average game for what he's been doing all season long. And they didn't really need that many big plays to really choke the life out of this defense.
Yeah, they did. Because like the Fresno defense, I know give up the yards, like, well, they give up all these yards. But like a lot of these drives that San Diego State had were just a few long plays. But when you're forcing them to punt, as many times they did, they punted, 5 times? They had a couple, let me see, drives. Like, in the fourth quarter especially, they punted all, there's only five possessions, 2 for San Diego State, 3 for Fresno. Well, I guess technically 3 for Aztecs, 2 plays to kneel down, but they forced punts. Like, fourth quarter, you're still in this game. You're only down 2 touchdowns. I know the offense hasn't been doing great. You force Aztecs to punt 3 and out early in the second, or right in the, they had, like, a quick drive in the fourth quarter there. Then there's 11 minutes left. You don't go out and get any points after that. You go 3 and out as well. So it's, you got it. Like, the defense played good at times for Fresno State here. And in the fourth quarter, if the offense could have anything, I'm not saying they could have won, but your defense came up big twice, and your offense just kind of did nothing at the end of the game when you had chances to possibly make this more interesting than what it was.
Yeah, I mean, and I can't argue that at all. I think that's a credit to the Aztecs defense because, you know, as good as the receivers are, like, they were basically handcuffed all night long. And after Virgil threw that interception, they didn't really take that many shots down the field. Like, I was watching this game and there were so many passes thrown like within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage.
That's what they're saying the whole broadcast. Why are you going underneath every single time?
Yeah. And so, you know, nobody on the team besides Calvin Munson had more than 5 tackles, but, you know, the guys in the secondary each had, you know, Trey Lomax had 3 tackles. Parker Baldwin had 3 tackles. Kevin Kelly had 4 tackles. Casey had 5. And so they were finding ways to make stops and basically suffocating this offense. It's gotten very, I mean, I can't even call it one dimensional because they want to throw the football but they just can't. And, you know, as much as I want to defend Virgil week after week, it's starting to get to the point where I don't know if I can anymore.
Well, this is possibly their best team they faced all year, most likely, or best defense.
That might be true, but I mean, like, if you can't challenge defenses down the field, you're not going to win many games, especially when you can't run the ball either. And this is not a team that has shown any consistency in doing that.
One last thing before we move on to next games, we'll probably spend a bit too much on this, but this game, a lot of it's coaching. I'm not the biggest fan of Jrue Rooter, as many people aren't, but watching a game, listening to the game, looking at what they've done, like I said, underneath passes, okay, we're not going downfield. Fake punt, you finally go downfield with a non-quarterback. You can't run the ball well. Virgil's not doing great, partly because they're throwing short passes. They don't study what San Diego State does on special teams. Or look, because here's the thing. South Alabama beat San Diego State partly because they have, like I mentioned a couple weeks ago, they played 3 wide, 4 wide, sometimes 5 wide to thin out that defense in the Aztecs. Fresno has some decent talent outside. I don't know why they didn't study that to say, okay, we can do this, but everything was short underneath. I don't know if they took more shots and anything happened, or at least do 10 to 15 yard routes instead of all these 3 to 8 yard routes they're doing. But are you not paying attention how other teams have been close to them or even beating them? This seems like they didn't even pay attention to how to maybe even defeat San Diego State.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know anymore, honestly.
It's just weird. But let's go on to the next game. How much longer does the Air Force 80 have on their contract?
I don't know.
Can we knock off a year after this performance or this scheduling snafu?
Yeah, I mean, it was a little weird for those who didn't see the picture. I believe it was Joseph Hoyt put out there.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of seats available for that game in the Cotton Bowl.
That's right, Cotton Bowl. This game was New Mexico and Air Force at the Cotton Bowl.
But, you know, those who were there and those who were watching on TV, it was a pretty fun game overall.
Got your money's worth.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a Red River shootout, but it's the next best thing.
It's the only thing after that. There's nothing else that goes on in the Cotton Bowl.
Yeah, that's true.
This part of it with seats was, okay, a couple things back up really quick. I guess it was sponsored by Lockheed Martin, whatever. I don't know how much money came into that. Air Force wanted this game in Dallas last year. New Mexico volunteered because, hey, we recruit Texas. Tarion Gibson's from Dallas. We have a lot of guys. Both, I think there's combined close to 50 guys on both rosters from the state of Texas, so that's a pretty good idea. But you give up a home game for this, and people were saying on Twitter, like, I was curious, like, people around, why aren't you there? Like, they're not going to travel too much, because I think the thought was, hey, we're an academy, a military branch, we'll get people from a lot of military bases, like I said before, a lot in Texas, Dallas, in that reasonable driving range. But people were saying tickets were starting at like $50 a piece. I'm like, had I paid $50 and knowing this was going to happen, I would have been fine. But going into this game, I'm not going to pay $50 to watch the Mexico and Air Force for the cheapest seat.
Yeah, maybe not. That might be asking a little too much.
But this game, man, what it really comes down to, like, you and me talked last week, without having Tarion Gibson, there are still big players for Boise State. But I still think with Tarion Gibson, that's the reason they won, even though he had 9 carries for 140 yards.
Mm-hmm.
even though McCorley's capable of big plays, Tyrone Owens, Lamar Jordan's capable for big plays, I think it's Gibson that's the reason they're winning these games.
Yeah, and I mean, I think we talked at length in the preview about how New Mexico was going to test this run defense in a way that really nobody else on the schedule will. And, you know, if you look at the final results, you know, Tarion Gibson, 9 carries, 140 yards. Tyrone Owens, 16 carries, 126 yards. I was seeing, I believe it was like midway through the third quarter, that New Mexico was basically doing what they did to San Jose State a couple weeks ago, where they were, at a certain point, they were averaging about 10 yards a carry. And ultimately, they ended up right around 7, which is still really good against this defense. And
that's no, we can no longer say it's good. Never again. Well, until they prove us wrong.
I'm not
well, okay, until they prove us wrong, right? Or prove us right or whatever.
But I mean, the other thing is, too, they were able to extend drives in a way that no one else the Air Force has played has done as well. Like, they were, the Lobos were actually were 9 of 15 on third downs. And so if you can keep your offense on the field, you're going to, you know, good things are going to happen. And that's basically what came down to for New Mexico. Like, they were able to extend drives. They were able to get big plays. Like, they had, I think, 9 plays of more than 10 yards on the ground.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. And so, and like 3 or 4 of those were more than like 30, 40, 50 yards, including, you know, Gibson's 60 yard touchdown in the first half. So, I mean, that's a credit to the Lobos offense for really rebounding in a big way.
Yeah. And like, and also one thing too, their defense made, yeah, you give up 40 points, you give up 5 yards a carry, you allow Nate Romine to have a career high 280 yards in this game, but they held Air Force to 2 field goals in the game. That's basically the difference. One was like a 40 something yarder, which whatever, you hold them from there, not like they'd get touchdown. It was a close, you hold them a goal line, but those 2 field goals were the difference in this game. The reason New Mexico, and New Mexico also stopped a 2-point conversion late in the game that could have made it 45-42. There's also, surprisingly, with how much they run, no turnovers in this game for either team.
Yeah, not until the last couple of Air Force drives where they turned it over on downs a couple times, but yeah.
Yeah. But it's, if you watch this game, it's like, and here's a thing too, one thing about Air Force as well, like New Mexico, the Air Force, okay, let me rephrase this. While the defense didn't play great, their second half defense, or late, yeah, played pretty well, because at one point they were down, what was it, 42-27 after New Mexico had a quick drive of what, not, or not quick drive, sorry, 9-play drive. There were 7.5 minutes left in the game. They allowed only 3 points the rest of the way. So their defense for the last quarter and a half played very well, forcing a field goal after a long 10-play drive and then multiple 3-and-outs. New Mexico actually ended the game on 4 drives, 3-and-outs. The last drive was 2 kneel downs. And so the Air Force, I guess I need to rephrase what I said about 2 minutes ago. Their defense came up late in the game. It's just, where was that earlier on to slow down this New Mexico offense?
Nowhere to be found, I guess.
And I guess there was also an Austin Apodaca sighting for some reason. We thought he was out for sure, but didn't do much, but he came in for a couple of plays for some reason, went 0-for-2 passing, and then like, all right, get Jordan back in there. Let him run the ball.
So does this win change your perception of New Mexico at all? Like, for those of you who may or may not have listened to our midseason recap show, I think our opinions on the Lobos were starting to change a little bit. Like, I think we were a little more pessimistic than we were coming into the season. Does this change that at all?
It does for me. When I did the little video yesterday recapping this game, created a huge gap of games, one of the questions came in was, are they going to go to a bowl game now? And I'm thinking I'm leaning a lot more toward that, because before the season started, neither of us probably felt Air Force would lose this game. Mm-hmm. So maybe this is kind of a flip-flop for the losing to Mexico but beating Air Force. Because being 3-3 at this point is not a surprise had they beaten New Mexico State.
Yeah.
And so I'm pretty sure they can beat Louisiana Monroe the week after. That's 4 wins. Going to Hawaii, Hawaii's much better, and playing at Hawaii's tough, so I'm not sure about that. I could see them beating Nevada, beating Wyoming, and depending what Colorado State defense shows up, they could maybe beat Colorado State. The only game I'm sure they'll probably not win is probably at Utah State. And even then, their offense has been hit or miss.
I mean, it'll be interesting to see what happens, too, because now the Lobos are 2-1 in the conference. And while, you know, they lost the tiebreaker to Boise State, I think they'll keep an eye on how the Broncos do going forward, especially in that season finale against Air Force. Because if the Falcons can pull an upset and the Lobos keep winning, like basically if they keep outscoring opponents the way that they did yesterday, I mean, anything's possible. And of course, Wyoming is still in the mix, and those two teams haven't played yet. So, you know, I think the Lobos came up with a big win, and now they have a lot to look forward to. They're still in the hunt for a division title, which I think may have surprised a lot of people.
Hey, had they not lost to, who was it, Colorado State last year, they would have represented the division against San Diego State.
Yeah, so, I mean, they, you know, they'll have to keep winning, and for the foreseeable future, I think that the schedule actually, like you said, comes out pretty favorably. But, yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens. The Lobos, big win, and that's a credit to them.
It sure is. I just don't see any game like, oh, they're going to lose for sure. So, all right, next game. Actually, we're going to take a quick break here, and we're going to go into the Colorado State to Boise State game with a special guest. All right, now we're actually, we're doing an interview this portion of the podcast when we discuss Boise State, Colorado State. But more importantly, we don't care about the result of the game all that much. I guess Broncos fans do because, hey, they're 6-0. But we're going to bring on our good buddy Connor Farrell here. It is Farrell, right? I should ask you before, not Farrell?
Yeah, Farrell.
Okay, good. Just making sure. We'll keep this in here. We're not messing with this stuff. So we brought you on because, and Matt's still here as well, so you can still chime in, of course, as always, since you're a big part of this screw around we do, I guess. Is that the fair way to put it, Matt?
Theoretically, I am, anyway.
Theoretically. All right, so here's what we want to talk about. People either are extremely excited to read this every week, or they're extremely getting ready to get the pitchforks and want to just poke you in the side until over a fire. Is that an accurate sentiment about your preview of hate for the Rams?
Yeah, I'd say I think a lot of people, Laramie now Boise, they were they didn't like it. They've never really liked it.
So I assume those are. If you don't know, if you didn't read this past week, it's mostly. I don't get how people can get so pissed off about this. It's tongue in cheek. It's clearly poking around. Yeah, there's probably a little bit of truth to some of it, but what was tell people about, if who didn't read it, kind of the gist of this past week's piece you put up.
So I just go through the four things that I hate the most about the upcoming opponent. And for Boise, that was their traveling fan base, which is obnoxious and in your face.
So not their fan base in general, right? Their traveling fan base.
No, yeah. I mean, I've never been to their home game, so I have no idea. But their traveling fan base is what I've had experience with, and I never really had a good experience with them. I picked on their website, which was a terrible user experience for me. And I picked on their blue field, which was the most sensitive people got, was about Boise's blue field.
Yeah, reading through like what you about the website, it's basically like a Q&A between you and the website. I went to it as well. It did take me about 3 times to actually click to get where I wanted to go. So it's not like you were just making stuff up because it's a little different than other websites.
No, yeah, it definitely. And like, you know, if somebody else had a good experience with it, that's them. But yeah, I had a terrible website experience with it, and I had to talk about it.
So, Matt, do you hate anything about Boise State you can add?
I mean, I hate that they always beat Fresno. Does that count?
Of course.
So I sympathize with Connor, at least a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, somebody was asking me about the milk can, because going into last week's rivalry about the oil can, they were like, no love for the milk can? I was like, you know, I would appreciate it more if it didn't always feel like scratchy trying to outwit itchy. You know what I mean?
The Coyote and Roadrunner, of course, right? It's one of those things. So was there any because I chimed in on this as well, because people don't like the response, hey, it's a joke. They think that's piling on. Are people too sensitive, or we don't care and like screw you? I think it's people are too sensitive.
With a Boise fan too, especially, like, this is the first fan base that legitimately got like offended by the things I said. And I think that's a lot of sensitivity and insecurity. I even had some say, yeah, we're a little sensitive because we haven't been invited to a P5 conference yet. And I was like, I don't care. Like, you can't just get mad about me hating on your blue field because of that, you know?
I can say the same about Rams fans about a month ago, pissy with us about all those P5 believers. I'm like, no, it's not going to happen. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and like all fan bases have some sensitivities and things that you can poke fun at that they don't like. But that's kind of part of sports. Like banter is part of sports. Like I can make fun of Boulder for being, you know, an underachieving California-like school. And they can poke fun at CSU for being never in a P5 and probably never will get to, at least not for another decade, probably invited to a P5. So it's like that's just part you can banter about.
Yeah, I sincerely think that like none of those people go on like Reddit, for example. Like if they think what we're doing is offensive or no. Like cutting edge or anything like that, like, because, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I follow them on Twitter, at least the college football subreddit. Mm-hmm. And like some people on there are legitimately funny and legitimately like tongue in cheek and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, grow a little bit of a thicker skin, Boise fans, and well, pretty much every fan base out there. I think we could all benefit from it, from being able to take a joke, basically.
I'll say this: the people on the website love comments, loved it. It was Twitter that was all. The guys who have 10 followers and have the egg Avi are like, we hate you. You're terrible. Who cares? This conference is the Mountain Worst. I'm like, you're in the freaking Mountain Worst. Come on. How is that? That's bashing your own self when you do that.
I think the worst part for me was when people would, you would respond to them like, why are you mad about this? You shouldn't be mad. They'd be like, well, I'm not mad, but you know, you're not worth my time. But they would still talk to you for like 30 minutes to the next day. I would still get messages. I'm like, if you're not mad, why are you still yelling at me?
That means we're doing something right, correct?
Yeah. I'm like, just admit you're mad. That's fine. Like, just don't deny it and then continue to yell at me.
There are a few guys on Twitter who I know who loved like a co. Like, you went on to, let me ask you about this experience, because you went on KTIK out in Boise. I know a couple guys. One of their guys writes for us in the morning. But you went on the afternoon show. I think it was with Jeff Caves or whatever. Did they pick up on that was a joke? Or were they taking any seriousness about it?
I think the main Jeff got it. I think he knew it was tongue-in-cheek. The co-host, who I think is the editor of the Idaho Statesman, he was not. He called it ridiculous.
Not ridiculously funny, but ridiculous?
He was like, I can't believe you would write something that's exaggeration and tongue-in-cheek. And I was like, well, that's what it is. So,
it's like I say, like Matt will agree with me. You, Fresno State's not very good, but you still have fun with it. You'll still screw around with it. We still like the sport of college football or college athletics, but you can't be too this serious all the time or you'll just grow a freaking ulcer and die.
Yeah, I can't. I mean, laughing through it, making jokes about it is the only way I cope at this point.
So let me ask you this. I already know the answer because we talked about it before. What would be your favorite team to do this against?
Oh, BYU for sure. I would love to pick. I mean, BYU is the most sensitive fan base probably in the country, other than maybe Florida State. So
I would put, because my actual occupation is working with BYU football, or not with the school, but doing stuff around them. Yeah, Boise is about to be probably 10 times worse, because if you fart anything about BYU, they'll pick it up and cry over your face about it. it's just the weirdest thing, but definitely check this out. Every Thursday, right? Is that when we're doing this thing?
Yep.
So check out Connor's Rockies vs. Connor. Rockies vs. Connor. At the moment, he's currently the Rockies manager, asterisk. So take that for what it's worth. But let's get to the game itself a little bit from last night. Colorado State played Boise State, and I could tell there was some sort of weather, but this game was, honestly, the first half, I was kind of bored. There wasn't many points. I was kind of disappointed with everything overall, both sides of the game.
Yeah, I fell asleep for a little bit of it. It started at 10:15 my time, which...
That's right, you're out. I forgot you're out that far, so that's a late one for you.
Yeah, Mountain West needs to figure that out and stop with that stuff. But CSU defense came to play a little bit. They stopped the pass, but the offense with Nick Stevens was awful. And 3-0 into the final minute of the second quarter with punts galore.
So let me ask you this, because with Nick Stevens coming in, he's better than he played with Colorado, so there's some positive to that. Yeah. Is with this team being at 3-4, we thought I honestly think Nick Stevens played a bit better than I thought he would, because he led the comeback, helped lead the comeback versus Utah State. Defense, I don't know what Marty English has done, because he's been a miracle worker the past couple five quarters or so, four plus quarters to actually have a game. But what do you make of this team going the rest of the way?
I honestly can't even say anymore. And the minute I start thinking that they figured it out and got good, they lay an egg like against Wyoming. So it's, I don't know what they're going to be. I think the defense has definitely kind of become a single unit, which they weren't against CU and at the beginning of the season. They're aggressive. They came after Boise a lot. They took Rippon down a lot in that first half. So it's this two-headed team that one head will show up and surprise you, and then the next game they'll show up and lay an egg, and it's, you know, they'll lose by 30 to UNLV or something.
So you're not on board with them maybe making a bowl game?
I can. That's the thing. The schedule leading up to it. I mean, the whole conference is like this. But you know, you got UNLV, New Mexico, Air Force. There's winnable games on the schedule.
I'm just Fresno, not
sure there. Yeah,
Fresno.
Yeah,
you're going to that game, Matt, aren't you? Heading out to Colorado or Fort Collins?
Yes, I am.
That what about that's in 2 weeks? So, do you think Chase and Virgil figure things out by then?
Oh, who knows?
Week to week.
Yeah, pretty much.
So really quick, we'll wrap this up here. Maybe me and Matt will talk about the game a tad more, but from what you saw, I know you went to sleep early. We'll forget about the game. Me and Matt will mention something about it because McNichols played well, and that's basically the reason Boise won. Yeah. I do like the last 90 seconds where there was a multiple onside kicks. They recovered and then they attempted to do some sort of bands on the field play at the end to win, which, yes, it was a forward pass, but like... Where do you, like, I know this team's, like, up and down. It's like, oh, they might be good, they may not be good. Do you think they're playing this close to Boise State? Is this more the team we'll see? Or is it the Colorado game? Like, where do you kind of gauge them at this point? Like, not kind of the bowl question again, but are they as good as Boise State? Or did they just get executed well when they needed to make it look closer than what it really was?
I think that Colorado team won't ever show up again. I think that was a... You know, the team was not a unit. It wasn't together. The defense was full of holes and young. And, you know, Nick Stevens and Faiton Bauta were terrible. And so I think the team's kind of moved on from that. And it's definitely a more cohesive team. So I think we're going to see something more what Utah State and Boise was. But I don't know if the Boise game was as close because they're as good as Boise. I don't think they're as talented or as, you know, skilled as Boise State.
Okay, that's fair. I think they had some bright spots, but two onside kicks will do it for you. How does Boise not recover after the second one? Paying attention to that, and nearly got that third one. Who's next? So who's next week for the preview of, hey, who's on the Rams schedule for the next time you're going to just kind of piss all over, I guess?
Thursday is UNLV, which will be fun because it's Vegas. So
I assume we're going to do that Wednesday or something, I guess?
I think they do have a Saturday game.
I thought you said they played Thursday.
Yeah. That's when the preview drops.
Check out for that. That should be a good one. So everybody, check them out. If you like the Colorado Rockies, enjoy the offseason, I guess. I don't know. Is that going well for them?
They fired all their coaches.
On the bright side, though, they haven't lost a game since September.
Yeah. So that's good.
There you go. That's a great one. So, Connor, thanks a ton for hopping on. Everybody, check that out. Check him out for more fun snarkiness. So, Rockies vs Connor. That's a CONNOR on Twitter. There for, I don't know. He'll talk back to you. He doesn't care. It's fun. Remember, it's supposed to be fun, people. All right, we'll continue here going on. That was our great interview with our preview of Hate. Guys, so if you don't like Connor's work, I'm sorry, but come on, it's fun, right? Right, Matt? Can you laugh?
He fits in with the mission statement of our entire site, which is that we're biased against your team.
That's exactly 100% true. So we didn't talk a ton about the game, but all really matters. Yeah, Rams made a huge comeback. There were some forward passes, and it was the most boring first half of football I've seen in a while. The rain doesn't help. But next game, Nevada at San Jose State. I don't know what to make of the West Division, besides San Diego State.
It's a mess.
You're being very kind. San Jose State won 14-10 on a Kenny Potter running himself corner of the end zone, diving in to get the game-winning touchdown late in the game to win 14-10. But besides that, Potter didn't play very well. Tyler Stewart of Nevada played pretty terrible. For some reason, the Wolfpack brought back the triple option. Didn't go very well either.
I mean, I think what's interesting, I don't know if I would necessarily say that Potter didn't play well. Because
statistically, I guess, for no touchdowns and only 142 yards passing.
Yes and no. I mean, I'll give him a little bit of credit because, you know, he didn't have any turnovers. Mm-hmm. One, and that's a positive sign. But they didn't find maybe as many big plays as Spartans fans might have expected because, you know, he did have five plays that went more than 15 yards. But if you remove all of those, you know, again, you're looking at a lot of short passes. And I think that that really comes out in the box score as well, you know. Tim Crawley had two catches for 20 yards, but one of those was a 17-yard catch and one of those was a 3-yard catch. Malik Robertson had a 14-yard catch. That was it. Yeah. You know, and half of Justin Holmes' production, 32 yards, came on his 16-yard catch later in the game. So I think that's a credit to Nevada's defense, which again, I think played pretty well, all things considered. Like they had 11 tackles for loss and 4 sacks, which I think we both said was something to keep an eye on coming into this game. Could the Spartans keep Kenny Potter upright? Well, maybe not quite so much, but
not so much, no.
Not so much. And I mean they found a way to make plays late though. And, you know, his rushing statistics may not look all that pretty, but you know, Potter had those two touchdowns on the ground. Malik Robertson had 139 yards, and so they were able to stay in this game and come out with an ugly win.
Potter averaged 0.3 yards per rush, just so you know.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of that has to do with
sack. Yeah, of course.
Both
these teams are confusing to me just because neither of them. Yeah, this is more of a, I want to go back to what you said. You got to give credit to defense because both defenses held these teams down. San Jose State actually had a running attack in this game, which hasn't. This is what I think is one of the keys we also mentioned, where somebody has to run the ball well. Malik Robertson, Roberson had 35 carries for 139, mm-hmm. No touchdowns. But if you didn't have if San Jose State didn't have that running attack by him, they averaged only, I know he got the sacks, but barely over 2 yards per carry. And so without him, this could have been an uglier game, if that's possible.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that, you know, they held James Butler down in a way that I think many might not have expected either. Like
a little bit, yeah.
He had 3 catches for 92 yards, which was a nice change of pace. But on the ground, you know, he had 20 carries and he only had 94 yards, which is okay, but not what we might have expected against this defense. And I think that that's a credit to, you know, the front seven maybe having its best game of the year. Like Christian Tago, we've been waiting for him to have, you know, the Christian Tago type game we've come to know and expect. He had 2 tackles for loss yesterday. You know, Owen Roberts, one of the linebackers, had 2 tackles for loss, and they had 8 of their own as a team. And so I think that's a credit to them that, you know, they knew that Tyler Stewart wasn't going to beat them deep, and he didn't. Like, he had the one pass to James Butler that was 46 yards, but beyond that, he was only 9 of 20 for 144 yards, and he threw 2 interceptions. And, you know, every time Nevada threatened, they found an answer.
Yeah, so I apologize for you saying I should not be so down on the Spartan secondary.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's been a little bit of a rough season, but, you know, they still have playmakers back there, and that's what they really kind of proved. And they found those interceptions in really good spots, too. Like, you know, the first interception that Stewart threw, they turned it into that first touchdown. And then, they weren't able to do anything with the second one, but it was I lost my train of thought. But basically, they put themselves in a position to succeed with those turnovers that they generated. Let's put it that way.
Well, one of the interceptions was they went for it on 4th and 5.
Was the second.
Oh, yeah, that's the second one. Yeah, I just pulled up here really quick. Yeah, they intercept at the 28, only got a couple yards. Instead of kicking a 40-yard field goal, they decided to go for it, incomplete pass to Shane Smith. So, but there was... This was an ugly game, but it's more of a, if you like defense, this was probably a game you wanted to watch. Enough running. If you like Big Ten football, you probably should have watched this game last night. So,
yeah, exactly.
Excluding Michigan Rutgers, I would say.
Yeah.
Did you hear, really quick, not to sidetrack, but did you hear the promotion they did for Ruth's Chris in Ann Arbor at before that game?
Yeah, 72% off, 78% off?
Yeah, what they did, yeah, they said, we'll give for the week after the Michigan Rutgers game in Ann Arbor, 1% off a steak or meal, I don't recall, maybe your order, maybe just whatever, a percentage off per point victory over Rutgers. 78%. I think they did cap it at 50, but that's a pretty cool promotion, but it's like, who could foresee 78 point difference?
That's still that's a good deal. I would take that deal if I could.
Heck it. Yeah, I work right next door to Ruth Chris, and we don't get any sort of percentage off, which would have been nice because we're in the same building. But even at 50% off, heck, that's still a, what do you pay, $50 instead of $100 for a meal or something? So I just thought that was kind of interesting. The non-Big Ten game of last week comparing when looking at this game. But let's go to the we're at the final game already. Is that correct? Are we?
I think so.
We only had five. Yeah, only a couple games this week. So the late game, Hawaii Warriors against UNLV Rebels in Honolulu. Again, Time Warner Oceanic game, so that kind of stinks. But if you're in Vegas, it's on your local NBC affiliate. And, well, if you like points, you got points last night.
Yeah. Also, if you were paying attention to the Reddit college football Twitter account last night, some hero was broadcasting from the stands as well. So you might have been able to be able to pick up on that as well.
Dang it.
So whoever you are out there, we salute you.
Oh, also really quick, I will make an announcement, but be vague about it. We have a very good potential to have to give some lucky listeners tickets to a Hawaii football game this year.
Ooh.
And it's you can take a guess of what's left in the home game. I still need to talk with Keith to figure out the criteria for that or what we're going to do to help to give away some tickets. But we tried this last year, but nobody wanted to see Hawaii versus San Jose State. And I can't blame you.
Okay.
Okay, there's only three home games left, and you got New Mexico, Boise State, UMass, and let's just say it's an intriguing matchup, so I'll leave it at that. And we'll go offline and discuss that in further detail, but Hawaii was so close to being 3-0 in conference play. They fall 41-38 with a lot of points. Late field goal for the win on that's a touchdown run, but Dalton Sneed came in, and we did hear rumblings from head coach Tony Sanchez will play two quarterbacks. That wasn't really the case. I think when he started seeing Dalton Sneed slice and dice this defense, it's like, let's see how you do, Dalton. Let's keep you in the game. As he went a pretty solid 19-27 for 279 and a pair of touchdowns. Yeah, and he rushed for another 60 more.
Safe to say he rebounded in a big way. You know, and you know, that's a credit to the offensive line too, because they didn't give up any sacks. And, you know, it's not only Sneed was able to rebound in a big way, but the running game, which more or less got shut down last week in San Diego, you know, they rebounded in a big way too. You know, Lexington Thomas had another 100-yard game. Charles Williams pitched in with 85 yards on 14 carries of his own. But I think what's worth watching going forward, they have a really efficient short yardage weapon, goal line weapon now too. David Green, who I believe had a couple touchdowns against Fresno a couple weeks ago.
He did his best Jerome Bettis impersonation in his final year.
Four carries. 9 yards, two touchdowns. But hey, it doesn't matter how many yards you have, the whole
they
point
count.
Is supposed to score points, and that's exactly what UNLV did.
Yeah, I don't know what to make too much of the game because both teams are vastly improved over the past couple of years. A lot of points. If you could watch it, exciting game to check out what was going on. I wouldn't say like UNLV's back or Hawaii's down. They lost their conference game. But what it does tell me, the West is getting better because, yes, you're playing two of the teams. The defenses have been sketchy this year, but this wasn't a sloppy game to get to nearly 90 points. There were one fumble loss, I believe. That's it? Or one apiece?
That's correct, yeah.
So it was a pretty clean game. You had a good – Hawaii's running game came out pretty well with the trio, like we said, Lakalaka, St. Juiced, and Paul Harris. Only one turnover total, sorry. Hawaii had one lost fumble, so there's a couple fumbles that were recovered, not lost. But, like, Hawaii averaged – when's the last time Hawaii averaged almost 7 yards a game on the ground?
That is an excellent question. I mean, I think what it came down to really is that, you know, Drew Brown wasn't quite as efficient in this game as he was in, you know, his first two starts. You know, he was only 17 of 32, 217 yards. And, you know, maybe they needed him to be a little more efficient and they just weren't able to get it done.
He didn't run as much as he has, but that's only 50%, 17 to 32.
Yeah.
So does this make a difference for bowling for either team? Like, I don't recall. I think we basically would probably call this a toss-up in our midseason show. Because Hawaii needs sevens wins. I think Hawaii's probably out of it now, right?
They might be. Because now they're down to 3-4, and they need 4 more wins the rest of the way. So it's going to be kind of a tall task for them. You know, but, you know, even in the division race, you know, UNLV, they already lost to San Diego State, so they lost that particular tiebreaker. But, you know, if San Diego State finds a way to stumble down the stretch, you know, UNLV's in a position, you know, like we talked about with New Mexico, to slip in there if something weird and wacky happens down the stretch. So that's something to keep an eye on because, you know, going to the island, especially this year, hasn't really been fun for anybody. You know, Nevada went there and took a beating a few weeks ago. So this is kind of a big win for them. It's the kind of thing that makes you think that they're not that far away from really turning the corner and competing on a more consistent basis.
Yeah, especially with they finally have a quarterback. They have a deep running crew back there. The guys, it's more than a lot of seniors. Drew Brown will be around for a while. Other running backs. I think Marcus Kemp a senior? Is he one of the key playmakers that's a final year of eligibility, I want to say?
Yeah, he's a senior.
Okay, so he might be gone, so you got to find replacement there, but defense needs to be a bit better, but if you score enough points and if Drew Brown improves, and it's his first time starting, mid-season starter coming in from a junior college transfer, he still has a couple years left, and I'm not saying Hawaii's going to be... I'll say this, they're... further along than I thought they would be in Nick Rolovich's first year. Much further
Hawaii,
along.
Hawaii, by the way, through three conference games, second highest scoring team in conference.
Who's the highest? Who's number one?
New Mexico.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. I was trying to think real quick. Yeah, they scored a lot of points. Is New Mexico? They only scored what they scored versus Boise. Not many points,
New Mexico,
right?
New Mexico has scored and given up the most points in conference.
There we go. That's what I was looking for.
they have a minus 16 point differential in conference so far. In Hawaii, for what it's worth, if I'm doing my math correctly, it is plus 35. So that's something to keep an eye on.
It's pretty impressive, plus 35. So that's what we got for tonight. Anything, any last tidbits we need to add for the show?
Not that I could think of. I think we're all set.
It's kind of a quick one. The only thing I'll add, Boise's now 14 in the coach's poll, so they're moving up closer, getting on closer to being ahead of Houston. Not that it matters right now, but they're the only ranked team at Demona. Aztecs getting a couple of votes, but that's our show for tonight. We kept this. This is going to be 47 minutes long, or short, I should say. 47 minutes short for the show, but yeah, thanks for everybody. Thank you for listening. Thank you for Connor joining us to talk about his, again, tongue-in-cheek, not favorable, but funny, I assume, mostly funny, preview of hate. Check that out each week on Thursdays. But that's our show for tonight. Again, our website's mwcconnection.com, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, basically wherever you can get a podcast, we're pretty much there. So we'll see you guys next time when we have another slate of games. And like we always say, we especially